time to thrive. Welcome to the Thriveology Podcast with Dr. Lee Bockham. Join us as we explore ways that you can thrive in your life, regardless of what life throws at you. It's your life. Time to live it.
Hey, Thrivers. Welcome to the Thriveology Podcast. This is the podcast to inform, inspire, motivate, and transform your life. This is where we learn how to thrive. And today, I have a very special, great interview for you. I got a chance to talk with Josh Matthews Morgan, and I think you're really going to get a lot out of this interview. We talked about habits. We talked about rituals and the difference between a habit and a ritual. We talked about how the brain creates new ways of doing things, new ways of understanding. I think this is going to be a great, great session for you. If you're looking on how to thrive, I think you're going to get so much out of this. Now, just to tell you a little bit about Josh. Josh is the co-founder of Learn Your Brain. This is a company that helps individuals and teams develop the mental programming for peak performance. They are all about peak performance. He's also the co-author of Deliver, How to Perform Your Best When It Counts the Most. Josh is a speaker. He's an in-demand trainer. He does lots of coaching, and his company, Learn Your Brain, works with multinational companies all over. Josh is in the middle of that, and Josh is going to tell you exactly how to reprogram your brain as we talk. And then we've got a special little presentation at the end. Josh has created a special video for you. So don't be missing the end. Listen to the end to find out how to get to that video and how to learn more about this. But right now, buckle your seatbelts and get ready to really learn how to thrive as I talk with Josh. Hey, Josh, thanks so much for being here. This is going to be a blast. I'm really excited about hearing from you on how you help people thrive and where you are in helping a wide audience. I know a lot of what you do is working with business owners, but you also have a framework that could apply to lots of people. In fact, I would say to everyone, certainly the people who are seeking better ways of thriving. So, Josh, thanks for being here. I'm looking forward to hearing from you.
It's great to be here, Lee. Thanks so much for having me.
Let's start with where I always like to start, which is how you got to here, how you got to your place of what you do now, why you're doing it, and kind of the story of what got you here.
Yeah, no, thanks for asking that. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, the long version of the story, and I'll just kind of brush over it quickly because I know that no one wants to hear my life story. They want to hear about thriving today. But I was living in Argentina at the time, and my business partner, currently, and my mother at the time, she's still my mother, but she called me up out of the blue and said, "Hey, I started this coaching company. It's right down your alley. Something I think you'd really enjoy." And you know, I just, you know, when you have those moments of intuition that you feel like something is the right thing. And I kind of followed that. And so we started the company about 4 years ago. As I know you talked about with your listeners, that we immediately, you know, ran into the reality that building a company is not easy and thriving is not easy. It's not as easy as some people make it look sometimes. So the first couple of years of our business, really, we were off in the wilderness, and we weren't, you know, we did a lot of research. We had a lot of knowledge, but we weren't really applying that knowledge. And I think that's kind of one of the lessons that I've really, you know, I've listened to some of the other podcasts, and they're awesome. And that's one of the things that I know you talk about is it's not enough to know something. It's, you know, you've got to actually do it too sometimes to apply it. And that this whole deal of thriving is not always just so easy, right? You really do have to put some effort into it. Now we're sitting here now after going through a lot of struggle and a lot of challenge in the earlier part, but luckily along the way, you know, through those challenges, we figured some things out, and that's what we share with our coaching clients, and we share really with the world. So.
Yeah. You know, just to back up on a couple of pieces, it is interesting that we are a world awash with knowledge. And,
yeah.
You know, and everybody thinks that, you know, all they have to do is read a book and they've got it.
Right.
And what they've got is a little bit of knowledge.
Right.
And so
right.
I've often challenged people, you know, the saying, knowledge is power. And my response is, well, applied knowledge is power.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is just knowledge. So,
yeah.
So let's talk some about that. You said you've applied that, but what you're doing now is helping people apply that in their lives.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talk some about what you're trying to get people to. What point are you trying to get to?
So, you know, we often say that people really do know, You know, they know how to thrive, right? They know the basic rules, the basic principles, you know, at least some work hard, you know, eat well, get good grades, all these things. But really, it's like you said, it's not enough to know what you need to do. And in our case, it's a business context but you know, if, let's say you're in a relationship, it's not enough to know you need to treat the other person well. You know, you have to actually do that and you have to, you know, manage your own self well so that you can be more present. You can be more loving. You can have that thriving, flourishing relationship that you really want. So it's a matter of, you know, it's a matter of translating what you know into who you are and what you consistently do. And I think that's a really key thing that when we were lost and struggling for so long, we weren't doing what we were even training people to do. You know, we weren't applying some of the things that we did. And it's partly because we just didn't know easy ways of applying it. We thought it was just, you know, just too hard to do all this thriving stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting how often I run into that. People who are, whether it's coaches or therapists or doctors, you know, they're helping other people get there.
Yeah.
Not necessarily applying it themselves, even though we know it. So, which brings up an interesting point. I've got a little cheat because you and I have already talked some about kind of your framework. And so I want to pull a piece of that in there. You talk about ritual.
Yeah.
And I asked you the difference between habit and ritual.
Yeah.
So that might be just because of what you've just talked about, that people are doing some things already aren't helping.
Mm-hmm.
And that switch. Can you just kind of
totally
compare and contrast the habits and ritual?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll do that. And then I'll give you an example of, you know, kind of the before and after for me, actually. So what we say is that habits are really, they're just the automatic behaviors that naturally form over time. And you have habits of thinking and you have habits of acting and, you know, they're not as separate as we like to think of them. As you know, the thoughts create the actions ultimately in the long term. But some of those habits that you have are good. They help you get where you want to go. They help you thrive a lot more. Some of them are non-productive, as we call it. We don't like to say bad because they just are. That's the way they are. They don't really help you. They might drain you of your energy. They might make you feel more deflated and more depressed or whatever it is. And what the distinction between habit and ritual then is that rituals, and I liked what you said, they're intentional habits. We chatted about this before. They're things that you deliberately do. You deliberately put in place so that you can, have a higher energy level. It's so that you can eat better if that's an important ritual for you. And so that you can have a lot greater levels of positivity, a lot greater levels of excitement and focus throughout the day that ultimately allow you to thrive. Mm-hmm. So that's the major difference, I think, between the two of them.
Yeah, what's always interesting to me is I watch people with these habits that I'm going, is that getting you where you want to?
Yeah.
And they know it's not, and yet they're stuck in them. And one of the questions they have is, so then why am I doing it? And my response is usually that at one point that habit was either working for you, at least not hurting you.
Yeah, yeah. It's doing something for you, you know, that habit, but it's probably not what you want it to, you know, it's not really giving you the impact and the results that you want it to long term. So that's why we kind of cling to these old habits because they're familiar and, you know, and it's on a brain level, it's wired into our circuitry. So it makes it a little trickier to change sometimes because we have these impulses to do the things that we're used to do and that we're wired to do, but they're not helping us some in some cases long term.
Well, let's push that a little further because I really want you to emphasize that. When you say wired into the brain, let's talk about what you mean by that because you and I think we're on the same page on that. What do you mean wired in?
So the way that neural networks form is basically through repetition over time. And, you know, the first time you do an activity, your brain doesn't really have an understanding of, you know, it doesn't have sort of the mental framework. It doesn't have the circuitry that allow you to do something with ease. But the more you do something over time, whether it's a good action or whether it's something that doesn't help you, the more it gets wired. So the stronger the neural connections become in the brain, it's, you know, eventually it becomes to where it's almost automatic. Mm-hmm. And so there's, you know, through myelination and the process of, you know, the myelin sheath building up between the neural pathways, that, you know, I know it just got really geeky all of a sudden, but basically what it means is that the impulses to do a specific action become so automatic that you don't even realize you're about to do it, you know, so that's,
you get that groove, you get the groove in your brain and it's just automatically rolling that way.
Right, exactly. And then, and you know, like, oh, I'm doing this again. Why, how did I get myself in this position? It's because your brain is just sort of programmed to lead you in that direction.
And I think one of the dangers of that, and I want to talk a little bit about this, is that, that what people see is that, to use your term, to pick up a ritual.
Yeah.
Always is going to feel, clumsy and cumbersome and odd at the beginning.
Sure. Sure.
And what people fail to realize is so did whatever habit they're doing now.
Exactly.
You know, when
exactly.
they started.
Yeah. They forget about that completely. Yeah. Right. And I think the key is they often make it too big in their mind. They think like, oh, I have to, you know, I want to get in shape. Well, let me run a marathon, you know, or let me start running 8 miles a day, even though I haven't run in 2 years. Right. So it's like, you know, they bite off a little bit more than they can chew. And then they get frustrated and give up the habit. You know, there's a lot more that we could talk about in terms of implementing rituals too. So, but yeah, I mean, it's basically, you know, what we tell people is make it easy, you know, find a way to make doing the old habit hard and make doing the new ritual easy.
Okay. And you said you had an example.
Yes. Yes. So what my big issue was focus during the day. And I noticed that some days I was really on fire. I was just, you know, I could get so much done during the day. I was a lot more focused and happy. And other days I was just completely the opposite. I, you know, I wasted so much time browsing on Facebook and on email. And I noticed that the one key behavior that led me to do those unproductive days, that led me to those days when I wasn't thriving, was when I would wake up and I would check my email and get into the consumer. We call it the consumer mindset, where you just, you know, reading the news, you're checking Facebook, you're checking your email. And over the course of the day, that's the mindset I was in. So I would get a little work done and then I would just jump right back into that kind of mindless consuming mode. And the ritual I put in place, when I finally realized it, was to, you know, I had to get rid of my iPhone, actually. It was kind of bad. It was a bad habit. It was very ingrained. But, I, you know, now I meditate in the morning first thing. I do what's called the positive momentum process. And I really don't even touch work or think about email until I've got myself into this a much more positive, focused, centered space. And it's made a huge difference over the long term.
Okay. You know, what you just said has probably freaked a few people out of imagining that. But one way, just to kind of push that home, I've heard a lot of people reference the fact that your inbox is everybody else's agenda.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
yours. And instead of catching up on what's important, you're catching up on what's important to other people.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you jump into that and that is your framework. But, you even got rid of your iPhone, which
I don't recommend that to everyone. I think I was a special case. So, you know,
you're hitting too close to home there.
Yeah. No, I know. I mean, it's really not the right thing to do for everyone, and rituals and these habits are very individual to each person. So it's not like there's a one size fit all, you know, solution for everyone. But in my case, I did everything I could to distance myself from my iPhone. And it, just the thought of that, you know, needing to know what was happening in the world led me to break every rule that I had. So I finally just said, you know what, I'm happier when I'm not doing this. Yeah. And for me, it was the right decision.
Yeah. One of the things that I did, I realized a very similar thing probably about 6 months ago, maybe a little longer, that when the first thing I would do is run to the inbox, you know, and I didn't do it on my iPhone, but mainly because I have aging eyes and that, you know, just it took too long. But, what I had to do, first thing I did is I sent an email to my team and said, you know, if you send me something and you don't hear back from me before noon, that's because I haven't seen it.
Right,
And I just said to everybody that was kind of important, might need to get in touch with me, nothing's happening before then. That's the first time I'm going to open and check email.
Good. That's awesome.
And the second thing I did is I realized that I got up sometimes and there were some emails I had to send.
Right.
So I would make it so my system didn't automatically check emails, you know, and I could send them, but it still wouldn't check them. And so I'd get up and dash off a few. What I recognize is I'm violating everybody else's, you know, morning ritual, but
but as long as you're being proactive,
I'm good on my end. Right.
Right.
Good. That's which is an interesting, I mean, we're using that as an example, but that's what we're pointing to are some places of going, what's not productive in my life
right,
that have become habitual.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And I think the easiest way to change those things, people make habit change really hard, way harder than it should be. It's, you know, we got this idea from Chip and Dan Heath in their book Switch. I think like how to change when change is hard is the subtitle, which is so true because these changes sometimes are difficult to make. And what one of the things they talked about is this idea of activation energy. And activation energy just means the energy you need to do to do some activity. So if you want to watch TV, unfortunately, it's really easy to watch TV. You just get your clicker and turn it on and you got 2 hours of mindless, you know, entertainment. But other activities like these new rituals, maybe it's going for a run, they require more energy initially to start them up because you know, you gotta get your shoes ready. You gotta, you know, make sure you have a clean pair of clothes. It's not something that you're in the mindset of. And so it takes a little more energy up front to do. Mm-hmm. And so what we encourage people is the old habit that you want to stop, you know, you always replace a habit with something new, right? You don't just try to stop it, but the old habit that's not productive, the thing that you don't want to do anymore, you put barriers in the way of you doing that, of that habit. So you make it really difficult to perform. And it could be very something like you set your email so it wouldn't just automatically give you new emails. That's a barrier, mm-hmm. You know, because otherwise if it's that's not there, you start seeing everyone's emails in the morning and you go, oh, maybe I need to deal with this. And then you're off track, you know, immediately. So it's simple things like that, little simple switches that make you consciously decide to do the old habit. You know, you have to say, oh, do I really want to do this now? Does that make sense? Because kind of like when you put those barriers up, it forces your brain to say, wait, is this really what's going to help me thrive long term? Is this really the best thing for me to do during the day?
So you're really flipping it. You're making right. What was habit, easy habit, a harder, mm-hmm. harder thing to
exactly.
do.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then the new ritual, you might put out your running shoes and your running clothes the night before so that when you right. get up, you're staring at them. It's ready.
Exactly.
To go.
Exactly. Yeah. The new ritual, you want to make it as easy as possible to do and get rid of all your excuses and all the ways that make it hard for you to do the new ritual, at least in the beginning, until that becomes more the more ingrained mm-hmm. habit. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's talk a bit about, I mean, there are old habits that people want to get rid of and a lot, most people can kind of name a few.
Sure.
But choosing a new ritual.
Yes.
Is based on something. You know,
yes.
You have to, what are the pieces that you, what's going to lead to wanting to do that ritual?
Yeah. Okay, good. So the first question we ask is basically what do you struggle with during the day? In other words, what is this old habit keeping you from doing? Mm-hmm. And in our case, it might be the old habit makes you unfocused. Mm-hmm. In my case, that was my case. I couldn't focus during the day. Yep. So what ritual do you need to put in place that allows you to focus is the first question. So that's what I really needed was extra focus. And the rituals just varied based on, you know, person to person. But, you know, we kind of asked people, what is the one activity that would give you the biggest bang for your buck in terms of creating positive emotion and excitement? Helping you focus, staying connected to your vision and where you're going. So, you know, and that's different for each person. So it's really hard to give a one size fits all answer, but you know, it might be things like meditating for 10 or 15 minutes first thing in the morning. That was a game changer for me when I started doing that. Or, you know, taking a walk, at lunch or taking a walk and breaking up your work day so you're not so stressed out all the time and not constantly going because your brain can't constantly be thinking and processing. It's simple little things like that. They're not big changes. They're very small things that take 10, 15 minutes at the absolute most, but they produce very big effects in your life.
Okay. And those, okay. So let me step back a little bit further. And there
sure.
are some, when you talk about rituals, you have some parameters around which, I guess the whys of that. Why would
right.
you choose that? And part of it, what I heard you say was there's a problem you're trying to overcome is one of those
right.
pieces.
Right.
And so that would fill in the blank for some of them. But, you know, I would still put, you know, for instance, you say focus. I need to be
yeah.
more focused. And my response is, why do you need to be more focused? I mean, you know, some people would say, I don't want to be more focused. You know, I like kind of floating through life. It's easier
sure,
to not
sure,
be distracted.
Sure.
But for you, focus was important because...
Yes. Because I knew that, you know, over the long term, I needed to have specific times when I was really getting things done from my business and myself. And so it really comes back to your bigger vision of what you want to achieve with your life. And that's where these rituals come out of. You know, it's looking at your vision, and we really encourage people to write that down, to have a tangible image of where they want to go. It's looking at that and saying, okay, what am I doing now that's not helping me move towards that vision, towards this thing I really want? And what can I replace it with? The single thing that I can replace it with that will give me the biggest boost in either emotion and positivity, excitement, or in my focus. Those are the two big areas that we see with entrepreneurs and business owners especially. But, you know, there are other areas that people struggle with too.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that vision. It's possible and even probable that a lot of people would say, I don't have a clue what my vision is. I just want to get through the day.
Right.
So how do they get to that place of figuring out what their vision is?
That's a great question. So vision is, you know, again, not as complicated as it has to be. Basically, what a vision does is just helps you decide, how do you want to spend your time? What do you want to work towards? What is important in your life? And it does take a little soul searching, a little deep thinking to get to those answers. But all it is they call it, again, in that book, Chip and Dan Heath, that they mentioned it as like a destination postcard. So what that is basically, if you were to send yourself a postcard from the future and say, look at how amazing my life is right now, what would that look like? You got to paint that vivid image in all the details. And people get so caught up in this, they think that they have to do what, you know, be successful on other people's terms, if that makes sense. They need to have this amount of revenue, or they need to have this kind of relationship with their wife. And then it's really more about what you want. It's really more about what do you want to create? And, you know, you just got to identify that and start moving in that direction.
And that's a big one of what's your vision versus what visions have you absorbed from the expectations, really, not even visions.
Totally.
What you think of are the expectations.
Right. Yeah. And that was a big struggle for me, actually. That was one of my life lessons that I had to learn the hard way, was doing that. You know, I it's a long story basically for me on that, but I in high school I wrestled and I hurt myself a lot doing wrestling, partly because my heart wasn't really in it. And I was doing it because I thought other people would like me more. I was doing it because I thought they would give me more approval. And in the end, it was a pretty epic failure, really. I mean, I didn't do what I wanted to do. But the lesson from that I took is that if you don't have the innate desire to do something, if you're doing it for the wrong reasons, because you think other people will like you more, if you're doing it because it'll make you look more impressive, or, you know, to have an awesome resume or whatever it is, then it's you can't really be successful for it, because you don't have the desire, the really true desire to do something. It's someone else's desire that you think is important.
So what's interesting, Josh, is you figure that out sometime high school, college point.
Yeah.
You know, but that's not a high school, college question. It's a life question. You know, I meet doctors and attorneys who have gone, you know, a lot of schooling, a lot of difficulties to get there, who recognize that the reason that they're doing that is because some parent had an expectation, or some teacher told them, you'd be a great doctor, you'd be a great attorney.
Yeah.
And they're miserable, but they keep doing that because that's kind of the expectation.
Absolutely.
So part of what we're doing here is creating a scary little proposition for some people of going, what if what I've been doing? I mean, I think it's fair to say, if you're miserable doing what you're doing, you're probably not doing what you need to be doing.
Absolutely. 100%.
And so a sure sign of that is, you know, that kind of misery.
Yeah. Depression, you know, lethargic, you don't want to wake up and go to work, all that stuff, or whatever it is. Yeah.
So then let's talk about kind of that first step away from that to a new vision. What do you think that first step looks like for people? Well, let's say second step, because the first step is going, yep, I'm miserable.
Yeah.
That's me. What's the second step?
Okay. So the second step is realizing that a lot of people have intentions for you, and they want you to be, everyone wants someone, you know, everyone wants the people around them to become different than who they really are.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know, whether it's that demanding parent that you might have, someone might have had that said, you need to do this. You know, all our families are lawyers. All our families are doctors. You should be a doctor too. And it's realizing that those people have good intentions. You know, it's kind of like first you have to give yourself permission to say, it's my life and it's okay for me to make my own decisions. And if that upsets the people in my life that are close to me or that I care about, it's their fault. It's not my fault. Mm-hmm. And that's the number one, you know, mental transition that people have to make, is just to say, my world's not going to end if my mother is upset with me because I'm not pursuing this. You know, it's like, what kind of life are you really living? Are you really enjoying your life? Are you really flourishing and thriving, and excited to wake up in the morning? And if you're not, then you have to ask those deeper questions about, you know, what's really important to me? Right. What ultimately, what's the thing that gets me going and gets me excited?
Right. And I think one clarification is that we all, no matter what we're doing, you know, I think the danger is to say, well, I don't love everything about this, so it must be the wrong thing.
Sure.
I think sometimes we talked in the very beginning about how it looks like everybody else knows how to thrive and we don't. And
right.
And so we sometimes get that feeling that everything ought to be on easy street. And that's not what we're saying.
No.
That everything is going to be a struggle. You talked about when y'all were starting the coaching that first year you were trying to put some wheels on it, and it was a place where you knew you ought to be. That didn't make it easy. It just meant that something was pulling you along bigger than the short-term pain.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's not to say that, you know, people have this crazy idea of what thriving is, that it's like, you know, that upward trajectory where it's like, if you draw it on a graph, it like starts at the bottom, you know, that the typical thing, and just goes straight up, right? Yeah. You start here and then you know, 2 years from now, you're just millionaire or whatever, you know, whatever it is you want, you've achieved all your goals. Yeah. It's really not like that. You know, it's for anyone, even the truly successful people, it goes up a little bit at first, then goes down for a long time and then up a little bit. And, you know, and that's part of the benefit of going through that, is that it makes you better, really. It makes you more resilient. I love that you emphasize that in this, because I think it's so important to remember that the people, they're not people that thrive and are really successful are not just more talented. They're not just better at it than we are. They find a way to get through the challenges and they actually embrace the challenges because they know that it's going to make them stronger and they're going to be better for it ultimately.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, that's that difference between struggling and taking it on as a challenge. You can struggle and you kind of be stuck in the quicksand.
Exactly.
A challenge is saying, how do I overcome this? How do I learn from this, and how do I move on through it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And there really is opportunity in every challenge. There really is, you know, I love that, because I just had a conversation with someone yesterday who just really was the perfect example of this. And he said he's starting a business selling crepes. He's from France, and he's run into so many obstacles with, you know, regulatory obstacles. They saying, well, you can't have this in your restaurant. You can't have this. You can't have this. And he was deflated for a little while, but he said, I kept trying to find a way around that. I kept trying to find a way to make it work. And he said, in the end, it was so much better actually that I went through that, because they made my product better, actually, you know, because he embraced it as a challenge and not as an obstacle that he couldn't overcome. He actually made it so his food costs were lower and his product tasted better and all this stuff. And so it was really pretty an incredible story, that if you have that mindset, that challenge is great, it's good, then it will just lead you so far.
Okay, so we've talked some about building those rituals, and part of the reason that you have those rituals is because you've created a new vision for yourself and kind of a new purpose for where you want to get to.
Yeah.
What are the other pieces or another piece that you would add in there on how to make sure that ritual is where you need it to be?
Okay. Good question. So again, start small. You know, BJ Fogg, who's a researcher who talks about tiny habits, says that if you want to start running as a habit, for example, you know, you don't try to run 3 or 4 miles the first time. He says you put on your shoes the first day. That's it. You know, you put on your shoes and that's tangible progress. You know, here's the key thing is that anytime you start doing the habit, you know, anytime you make some progress towards it, you want to celebrate it. Mm-hmm. That's another thing, is to celebrate it in some way. Give yourself a pat on the back. Just mentally acknowledge, I'm doing this. You know, instead of what most people do is they start getting frustrated because they have these unrealistic expectations of themselves. And when they don't, you know, immediately hit the ground running with their habit and keep it for a year, they just say, oh, I'm a failure, or, mm-hmm. oh, you know, and it's not that. It's just, it's a gradual process. You have you'll start to notice that you feel a lot worse when you don't do it. And that's the tipping point. That's really the tipping point. You say, oh, I have to do this because I know how much it'll help me. And I know how I don't feel as good when I don't do this habit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I like that celebrating. You know, it's interesting how I watch people go from doing nothing and really in anything to trying to do everything in it. So, yeah. You know, people haven't been exercising and they, you know, maybe they heard from a doctor or just recognized that it's a little harder to see their belt buckle or their shoestrings or whatever.
Yeah.
Something wakes them up. And, I remember that, I was sick. It's been over a decade now, but that was a wake up call that I needed to, you know, take care of myself. Mm. And I noticed one of the things that I had to fight was the tendency of having to go from 0 to 100, you know, and I see it all the time. And let's just stay with that exercise, the running thing. So people will, you know, pull out their shoes and they go running and, you know, you go running the first time, it feels pretty good. You got lots of energy, you got lots of enthusiasm, and they run 5 miles and the next day, you know, they can't get out of bed.
Right, right.
And their response, instead of going, wow, maybe I overdid it, is, well, maybe I'm not built for running.
right.
I got to do, maybe I'm just built for sitting on the couch and watching TV. Right.
Exactly.
And instead of recognizing that it is a buildup, that
a
ritual is not the final ritual, it's the building blocks to the ritual.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we're constantly tweaking our rituals too, you know, adding little things here and there, making it more powerful and more easy to do. And it's really not, like you said, it's a process. It's not about, you know, one day the next you arrive. It's about making sure that those that you're habitually doing, you know, you're doing them as rituals, the things that really are what's going to move you towards what you want. And if you don't know what you want, that's the first step, is to identify that. But then it's not as difficult as people make it out to be. It's just really about celebrating the small wins, you know, and making it really easy to do it. And when you screw up, when you have a day where you don't, you know, don't do what you want to do, forgiving yourself. I know you've talked about that. And I love that, because that will allow you to get right back on the horse and do it. Mm-hmm. If you beat yourself up for it, you're just going to, you know, feel bad. You're going to feel deflated, and it's much more likely that you won't do that ritual long term.
Yeah. Going for 100% is a high standard.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just I've talked to people and they, you know, they've got this new habit and they don't do it every day, so they feel like a failure. And my response is, do you do your bad habits every day? I mean, is it every day that you?
Yeah,
you
know, good call. Yeah,
something else, and we forget that all you're trying to do is get to make it more and more a natural part of your life.
Right, and I think another piece of that too is that people often compare themselves to other people unfairly and they say, oh, look, my friend is running 6 miles a day. Why can't I do that? You know? Yeah. And it's like, but what they don't realize is their friend built up to that too. You know, we often see, you know, when people are performing at their best and they really are thriving, we think that they just started like that. And we just have this crazy idea that they just went and hit the ground 100 miles an hour, but they had to ramp up too. They had to do it as a process, and they had to fail a little bit and learn from that failure and find a way to make it better and easier. So,
yeah, and that's true across the board. You know, whether it's you're talking about a business, you know, that's thriving as a business, they're doing well. Mm-hmm. You miss the struggling years in there, or the failed businesses that guy had. You know, the lessons he learned the hard way, and we always are comparing that. Well, first, we're always comparing the external. What we're seeing to our internal, which is always a losing thing. And we're also comparing kind of the maybe not final product, but a more developed product to our earlier product.
Absolutely. And, you know, and the mantra you want to have is fail hard and fail fast, because, you know, that's going to lead you to people have this thing where they're so worried about failing, and it just gives them feedback on how they can do it better next time. Really, that's all failure is about. It's not, you know, something that you have to say, oh, I'm not worthy or I'm not a good person because it didn't go perfectly the first time. That's totally crazy.
Which is interesting. I mean, even that term failure, you know, instead of going, that didn't work, or well, that was a learning opportunity.
Absolutely. It's a reframe, right?
Yeah. And I think that's so true that the people who do succeed are the ones really who go through more failures. You know, they've sorted it out.
Completely.
Yeah.
I heard someone say that Barbara Corcoran, who's one of the investors on Shark Tank, that she had had something like 32 jobs before she was 23, something like that, some crazy number. And, you know, and so she did not figure it out early on in her life. She was not the superstar investor, you know, angel investor that she is now. In her early days, she struggled through it. And, and because she struggled through it, it turned her into the person she is now once she started figuring things out.
Yeah. I think one of the examples I love, having had two kids and watching them, is, you know, when kids are learning to walk, you know, they don't plop on their butt and go, well, that was a failure, I guess I'll just crawl around the rest of my life.
Right.
Try it again. And they get a little better at it. And it's the same process, whether they're learning to run, learning to crawl, learning to talk. It's not that you stop when it didn't work. You go, well, that one didn't work. Mm-hmm. Let's try that again.
Yeah, and I love that you mentioned that too, because kids, they have that mindset of it's fun. The whole process for them is fun, trying to learn how to walk and learning a new skill. It's not until the people, you know, they get in touch with the people around them, the adults who've lost sight of what learning is about and what progress and improving is about, that they start picking up those same ways of thinking about failure and, you know, all that and messing up. And they start to internalize that too. And they, you know, those comfort zones start to form, and they all of that kind of really comes because the people around them have educated them in a way that doesn't help them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know there are some, and you and I talked a little bit about that brain structure stuff early on. There are some fears that are inborn, but fear of failure is not one of them.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Yes.
We totally pick that up along the way.
Totally. And we can unlearn that too. I mean, just with reframing, it doesn't happen overnight again that we unlearn it, but yeah, totally. We can change that perspective.
So you mentioned the thriving people. What is your definition of thriving? Just so kind of you clarify for us where you see that frame.
Yeah. That's a really great question. I've been thinking about it a lot lately, actually. So hopefully I have a decent answer. I really think that thriving is a moment by moment thing. I love how you say that you're a full-time thriveologist, but a part-time thrivalist. Isn't that what you say?
Yeah.
Meaning that you know, you're always studying how to do it better, but you're not always applying it, because none of us always apply it.
Yeah.
So for me, thriving is an in-the-moment recognition that you're moving in the direction of your dreams and your goals. And it's not looking at the numbers and saying, yeah, I'm thriving now. It's saying, am I on the trajectory of achieving that? Am I on the path to it? It's all about that journey. Are you pointed towards what you really want and really moving powerfully towards that? That's thriving. Are you pointed in the opposite direction? Are you staying stuck in fear and struggle and worry and doubt? That's kind of the opposite of thriving.
Yeah. So it's kind of a surviving mindset. I mean, you're right. And I don't mean survival. I mean just kind of surviving. You just do it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Just making it through the day type of thing. Right. Which is not really how any of us were born to live.
So I want to bring up a piece of that, which is that in order to thrive, you've got to know what direction, not by default that you're headed, but what direction you want to go.
You choose to go. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And this is an interesting thing, is that people – they base their decisions on so many crazy factors. They think that, I'll give you an example. So in our business, we thought that we live in Athens, Georgia, and it's not a big town. And we thought that, you know, there weren't enough clients here to support our business. We had that belief for a long time. Oh, it's not a business town. It's a college town. There's, you know, and because we had that belief, it completely kept us stuck. But we realized that it was just a crazy assumption that we had and a crazy thing that we believed. And since we've changed that belief, it's like there's an abundance of people that need what we want here in this town alone, let alone the world. You know, it's like it's crazy to think some of the things that we do. And really, you know, if it's a belief that's keeping you stuck, you really want to question it. You really want to say, is this really true? Mm-hmm. Is this absolutely 100% true? And how can I know it's true? And more important than if it's true, is it helping me go where I want to go, this belief?
Just quickly, if somebody, you know, you're sitting there going, okay, I've got this belief and it's really held me back. Is this true? How do you test that?
It's hard to know. It's really hard to know. I think that part of it is just by taking action. You go out there and, you know, but the tricky thing about that though is if you have that belief in your mind, it becomes a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy. So you start to see the evidence of, yeah, oh, it is true because this person didn't want, you know, what I'm offering, or it is true because this is how they reacted to me. But it's really that you've evoked that reaction or you, does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not as much about if something is true, a belief is true or not. It's really about, does it serve you? Is it serving your thriving, or is it contributing to, you know, your, I guess, what would the opposite of thriving be for you?
Yeah, well,
struggle, stagnation.
Survive. I always put thrive survival. And survive.
Gotcha.
Because it's not, because I don't think it's destruction necessarily.
Sure, sure.
A lot of people survive through life, make it through life.
They make it
just
through life.
Thrived.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Totally. Stagnating. Yeah. Get that. So does that kind of make sense, that answer?
Yeah. I mean, there's some reality testing to it, and it.
Yes.
Yeah, I know that's a broad question because it kind of depends on someone's belief system, but
right.
I guess the point you bring up is that we've got to make some room for the possibility that our beliefs are not entirely true.
Yes, exactly.
And that's a good starting point, just to accept that, you know, is this really true is a fair question to ask.
Yes, it is a fair question to ask. And you don't know, you won't really know it's ultimately true until you've tried and tried and tried and 100% proven that it's not true. But even with that being said, there's 1,000 other things that you could possibly do and test to make something work if it doesn't work the first few times you try it. So, you know, I the truth thing is kind of tricky to parse out. It really is. And that's why it doesn't matter as much for us if something is true. It really is. You know, does that belief get you where you want to go ultimately? Mm-hmm. And if not, what's a more empowering, what's a more positive, you know, spin on that, that frees you up and allows you to at least keep moving forward towards what you want.
So let's just talk quickly about one other way to test that.
Okay.
And that's, what you do, some of what I do, which is coaching, of finding an outside place where somebody can say, you know, sometimes our beliefs, we don't even see them anymore.
Yes.
And they're so hidden from us that we can't even challenge. We don't even know to challenge them. You know,
exactly.
It's kind of like, figuring out is your surrounding. I always think about the movie, The Matrix, you know, of going, oh, what's behind that? Well, if it's always in front of you, you don't know.
Totally.
If it's just the illusion you've created or not.
Right.
And so somebody can test it. One of the examples I've often used for people is, you know, those big elephants that they stake in the ground with a little piece of rope. And my, I know how they do that is they start when they're baby elephants and they stake them with a heavy chain and let the baby elephant pull and pull and pull until the baby elephant gives up. Mm. And then the rest of the life, the elephant believes, I can't do that. And that never question it. There's nobody going, you know, one little yank and you're out of here.
Right.
And so part of what a coach does is to say, have you ever thought about or questioned that? So that's part of what you do. Mm-hmm. So let's talk some about what you do and then talk about some ways of connecting with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we do is basically we lead people through a process that allows them to really get out of their own way and allows them to change some of the habits and the rituals, the habits of thinking and the habits of behaving that just really don't serve them. It starts basically from identifying what they really want to achieve, not what they think they can achieve, but what they really want to achieve, because there's a big difference between those two, and getting really clear on that. And then we basically lead them through a process where that shows them some specific brain-based tools from positive psychology, from neuroscience that allow them to be just a lot more effective, a lot more centered, calm, a lot happier, and ultimately more successful in the long term. So that's basically what we do. And we've created our own unique process that allows people to really flourish in that sense.
And generally, y'all use that with entrepreneurs, business folks.
Yes, that's our main target.
Okay,
it's not exclusive. It's we do target more of a business, the business mentality and the business mindset. Mm-hmm. But really, the principles that we teach apply across the board. It applies to marriage. It applies to thriving in every sense of the word in your career with your family. It can totally be applied to every aspect of your life.
Oh yeah, I mean, you and I were talking about the model before we jumped on. I'm sitting there going, well, switching a habit for a ritual that you choose can be applied across your life.
Absolutely. And actually, it's interesting because some of the most important changes we encourage people to make are in their personal lives, not in their business lives, because that really frees them up to be more successful in their business life.
Yeah. It's all so intertwined, but the personal is so important.
Absolutely, 100%.
So, Josh, what's the best way for people to, and let me just say, if you're listening to this and you're going, wow, that's speaking my language and that's saying something that I really need to change, I want you to kind of take hold of that. And so, Josh, tell what's the best way of kind of getting in touch and getting a little more information?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think the absolute best way to do it is to check out our website. And actually, I created a video. We created a video, my business partner and I, about basically what are five mindset secrets that really allow you to flourish and allow you to create huge momentum in your life. It's again, it's designed more for a business type of context, but all these principles apply 100% to your personal life. So if you want to check out that video, we created a special link for Thriveology listeners to check it out. And it's at www.learnyourbrain.com/Thriveology.
Okay.
I guess everyone knows how to spell learn your brain, right?
we're going to have it in the notes underneath.
Okay.
So, yeah. If there's a question, but just because you don't have a strong Southern accent, but
right.
Your is your brain.
Yeah. Your brain. I think I said, right?
Yeah. Learnyourbrain.com
/Thriveology. Thriveology.
And we'll have that link in the show notes so people can find that easily. A lot of people are going to be running, doing a good habit of running while they're listening. So easiest thing is to go to thriveology.com and look in the show notes and just click and go.
Perfect. Sounds great.
Josh, thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me, Lee.
I appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
You too.
Been listening to the Thriveology podcast. Thank you for listening. If you want more information, visit us at thriveology.com or at thriveologymagazine.com. Remember that Thriveology is spelled T-H-R-I-V-E-O-L-O-G-Y. It's your life. Time to live it.